Hello, and welcome to Season 10, Episode 6 of the Virtual Coffee Podcast. Virtual Coffee is an intimate community of people at all stages of their tech journey, and we're here in this podcast sharing insights, experiences, and the lessons that we've all learned along the way. I'm Becca, and I'm here today with my co-host, Dan.
Thanks, Becca. This season, we're diving deep into our back pocket topics from our Tuesday Virtual Coffees. Today's topic, building relationships in open source. We are grateful to be sponsored by Level Up Financial Planning that helps you take your financial confidence to the next level. It's real financial planning to help you reach your goals and gain clarity on what actions you need to take now to maximize your tech career. Level Up even has a podcast where you can hear about some of the strategies he uses with his clients. Check out levelupfinancialplanning.com. You can get that link in our show notes.
All right, so now it's time to grab your favorite drink, settle in, and let's get started with today's Virtual Coffee Podcast. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Yo, how's it going, Beck?
Hey, it's going all right. How's it going with you?
I am doing well. It is the third week, starting the third week of Hacktoberfest. And so I hope everybody's having fun. And today we are talking about building relationships in open source.
Yes. I think this is like one of the things that's most important, but maybe that we talk about the least during Hacktoberfest. It's all about like, you got to get those four PRs, but what are the ultimate goals of actually contributing to open source?
Yeah, I believe that we on this podcast especially have talked about this sort of thing a lot. The value of contributing to open source outside of, I don't know, just making your GitHub profile look cool, right? which is not nothing, you know, don't want to like discount that. But we find open source contributions to be very, very valuable. And one of the reasons is because of the relationships that you can build up over your time.
Yeah, I saw this thing on Twitter recently where somebody was saying how important it is to build your network, especially if you are just getting into tech. And a bunch of people in the comments below were like, I'm new, but I don't know how to build my network. Like, what does that mean? How do you do it? And there were a lot of recommendations. But I think like this is a great time to be building your network because you're already involved. There's a community of people that are all doing the same thing. So, you know, at Virtual Coffee, we're doing it as a small group, but it's a huge event that's sponsored by DigitalOcean. So there are lots of people out there. There are many different communities and organizations that are putting on events, but also you have the communities, the open source communities themselves. And so there's plenty of opportunities. Well, you have to get out of your comfort zone. I feel like anytime I try to expand my network or to build relationships, yeah, I'm getting out of my comfort zone. So like you might have to put yourself out there a little bit. You might have to ask questions, but you know, you can also answer questions too. And so I think that it's important to identify, number one, realize there's so many opportunities at this point of the month to be able to expand those, but that extend beyond here. And ideally, you want to build relationships that extend beyond Hacktoberfest too. So maybe the goal is not necessarily those four pull requests, but maybe it's four relationships that you can build during this month.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we talk a lot during Hacktoberfest about how to find places to contribute. And we've talked about, and there's lots of resources for that. I think one of the best ways to build relationships in open source is to become a repeat contributor to a project. And there's value for that on both sides. You know, there's value just for you as a contributor. If you get more and more familiar with the project, your work will be better and, you know, probably easier, or you'll be able to take on more challenging, you know, projects or issues. And obviously if you are helpful and you keep coming back to help, the maintainers of the project will know you and trust you, as well, which can have just tremendous benefits, down the line. And they can't always be predicted. It's not a transaction, you know, it's building trust capitals. We talked about, it's that sort of thing. And expanding your network. And there's just so many benefits to this sort of thing. I think it's, I honestly, I think it's one of the, like, the, you know, I'm like, none of us like to talk about like building your network, you know, obviously, but the, it kind of comes for free here with contributing, right? So if you think of it as, you know, if you hate networking, you know, you don't like, you're not good at it, all that sort of thing, which I'm not either. But you like doing development stuff or any kind of open source work. It like comes for free as long as you are like, you know, actually trying to be helpful and not trying to get something out of it and are respectful and all that stuff. The network comes built in lots right. of times.
Yeah. And I see, so years ago, I used to listen to this podcast and it was about screenwriting. And one of the pieces of advice that I'm always carrying with me is look at the person who's one step ahead of you. And so in terms of like screenwriting, they're saying, if you're trying to sell your screenplay, look at someone who's just done the thing that you're trying to do right now, because it might not seem like the best person. Maybe you want to talk to that movie executive or whatever, but that's not the person that you're going to connect with or build a relationship with. They're at a very different stage. Their time is very limited. And so, but that person ahead of you is going to remember you if you build that relationship with them. And eventually they might be that movie executive, or they might have some pull over what gets made. And I think the same thing that applies here. You know, we often have this feeling of like, well, I have a question. I need to connect with the maintainer. The maintainer is not answering my question. But in some ways, that's kind of like the movie executive role. Like, you bypass all the other people that are working on and supporting the project, depending on the size of the project, and you went to the person at the top. But maybe, you know, one of these ways to build relationships and goodwill is to, you know, see, okay, this person has already done a contribution here. I'm going to talk to them. I'm going to go into the community and I'm going to ask a general question. I'm not going to ask the maintainer in the comments or in discussions or whatever. I'm going to build relationships with people who are where I want to be next. And I think that you can learn a lot in that way. And it also will eventually build you goodwill with the maintainer.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. When you come at a project with, you know, okay, I need this thing to work and it's not working, all that stuff, which can be very frustrating. You know, there's lots of ways to go about, you know, helping yourself, helping the project. And usually adding a maintainer is never one of them. You know, the maintainers are going to see everything. They're subscribed to the repository, like, trust me, yeah. You know what I mean? And so when you add a maintainer, you know, it'll limit maybe the amount of people that respond to you. You know, maybe some people might respond, but don't like think they should because you are asking the maintainer, you know, yeah. That sort of thing. And it's also just a, you know, I mean, it's just kind of a sign of impatience or a little bit of lack of respect. Even if you aren't being like, even if you aren't, you know, your words aren't rude, right? I mean, like, we can all like pick out like, oh, this person is just like plainly being rude, you know, and you don't mean to be rude, but there are ways to like do this sort of thing, like add a maintainer, even if your request is politely worded, you know, it's like kind of pushy, right? Or something like that. And maintainers lots of times have enough on their plates to not want to have to deal with people being like pushing themselves into their face, you know?
Yeah. I was listening to this podcast, The Secret Sauce, with the episode with Evan Yu, who's the creator of You and I think V, right? Anyway, he was talking about the importance, like, how do you get to be, it was like maybe on the core team or something like that. And I think that, you know, this kind of like extends what we're talking about here, because one of the things that he said was there was this younger contributor who first what he did was really understood the project. He understood the vision of what he was contributing to. He understood the style of code that he was supposed to be submitting, right? And then he created pull requests that reflected that he had taken the time to understand the project and the requirements, and he consistently submitted quality pull requests. And so Evan noticed this, and then, you know, this formed a relationship. So, you know, I think one of the things when we talk about relationship building, we can think about is also, you know, if you're doing all of the right things, that can be noticed by other people who maybe you haven't had a conversation with, or a maintainer that is out of your reach. But if you're consistently submitting quality work, then that for sure will be noticed, and that can help build the relationship and your credibility as well.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That's the ways that you approach these sort of things. You know, I mean, this goes back to like being a good open source, you know, citizen, I suppose. But it's all, you know, this is all, I know the benefits are all like tied up together, right? Like if you want your pull request to be accepted, if you want your issue to be assigned, all of that stuff, you know, there's lots and lots of ways to help your chances of doing that. But it also, so like, which like, we'll get your pull request merged, you know, like there's lots of ways to improve your chances of that happening, right? And it also improves your network and it improves the relationship. And especially, like I said before, if you are, I mean, we've both said it a million times, but if you're a repeat contributor, and it's honestly, as a person who is maintaining projects, whether it's open source or not, or work or anything, knowing that you can trust somebody else to work on this project that you've created, is such a good feeling, you know, and it's so valuable. And becoming that person, I think, is also a good feeling. I like being the person who somebody can trust, you know, a lot, you know, and so it's why it is kind of nice to find some of these smaller projects, maybe, or different projects, and work your way up. So like going back to what you were talking about before of looking at the person like one step ahead of you, another way to think about that is finding smaller projects that aren't maybe as exciting. They're not flashy. Like it's not, I mean, put it on your resume if there's room, but like, it's not like, oh, I contributed to React. I contributed to this thing, you know, but there are millions and millions of packages out there, or projects, or open source anything. And finding ones with smaller communities where you can kind of build a little bit of a network, I think it's a really, really good way to do that too. And you never know, like, you never know what is going to happen, you know, down the line. But even if nothing else happens, you have maybe a friend and somebody who kind of knows your name at least a little bit, and also like a lot of experience, and et cetera. There's just like, it's just so many benefits that it, you know, it's hard to stop talking about the different ways that it's good.
Yeah, I think, you know, another way that you can build a relationship is offering to help in ways that might not be obvious. So some of the obvious ways of helping are submitting pull requests, of triaging issues. That's kind of part of the regular flow of open source. So if you're new to open source, that might not be obvious to you, but that's something that you'll learn and you'll grow in. But other things that are less obvious might be, hey, can I help as a code of conduct responder in your Discord? Or can I write a blog post for you? Or, you know, what help do you need? Like asking the maintainers, because sometimes, you know, there are people that sometimes need help writing a newsletter or raising money or raising awareness. So that can be another way to build trust capital. It could be a way to build those relationships. And those are things that you can continue to do beyond Hacktoberfest. I would say like another way that I've seen recently to get involved and build those relationships is through Reddit. And I don't recommend Reddit very often, because anytime I post in Reddit, if it's not cat Reddit, then people just like slam me immediately. So beware. That's your warning.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of people that like ask for help on their projects. And it's the kind of projects that you're just talking about, Dan, like the small projects. Like, hey, I have this project I'm really excited about, but I have no contributors. Like, how do I get contributors? And, you know, a lot of times I'll respond to them and be like, hey, maybe you should write from issues, or there's not a contributing guide or something like that. But sometimes that's where people are reaching out for help on their projects, and it's a more visible way than you would find on like in personal Discords or whatever.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Is there a specific subreddit that you would recommend?
I would say the open source subreddit is where I've seen it. Okay. And then maybe like / GitHub too.
Okay. Nice. Yeah, who knew? Not me.
I learned about Reddit this year. So
nice. Yeah, all right. That's really interesting. And like that kind of thing, because I feel like the kinds of questions that people are asking, or, you know, requests for help, like that kind of thing, it's hard to, I mean, maybe you could, maybe you would see it on Twitter or something, but it's, there's not like another place I can think of where it's all collected and it's not just one community, but, you know, like lots of people on that topic. And it's less like, you know, it's not just issues or whatever, so, or Stack Overflow, where it's just like specific questions, you know. That's really neat. That's a good, I like that.
Yeah, the other thing about the, you know, again, those small projects and answering a request like that, that you often have one-on-one time with a maintainer that you wouldn't get with those large projects. But, you know, I think that this is all like valuable experience, and kind of on the other side of things. So we're kind of looking at it from the contributor's perspective, but I think there's a lot of folks out there who are in a maintainer role or who are in an experienced or senior plus role, whatever, that are also looking to like provide support for people and to build those relationships. And so you might feel like there's someone willing to spend some time with you. But I think like maybe we talked in episode 3, I think, about big end mentorship versus small end mentorship. What do you think are some good ways to mentor someone during Hacktoberfest?
So I guess let me clarify your question. Do you mean just a person like we do in Virtual Coffee, or do you mean as a maintainer and you're talking about a potential contributor?
Oh, that's I hadn't thought about the latter, but let's go with that.
Because that's an experience that I've run into a few times. And I, you know, a lot of it is tied into Virtual Coffee as well. So I do kind of know the person already, but it's like first time contributors, that kind of thing, right? And so there are a lot of things that you could do, I think, to help people through that without creating a ton of work on your side, right? Because maintainers, you know, like we don't want to, some things are worth spending time on, you know what I mean? But it's, if you can streamline it different ways, you know. And so a very good README, I think, is, you know, top of the line, also like a contributing guide. And they don't have to be, like, especially if you're on a small project, right? I wouldn't say contributing guide is a must for people with smaller projects where they don't expect like lots and lots of contributions. I think I would put all that in just in the README, right? You can just have a section in the README about like, here's what I expect or something like that. But laying all that stuff down is important and will save you time in the future. And also is a point where you can, if you get somebody who is trying to help, but they don't know how, right? So there's like people that come in that know better or should know better, but don't read the contributing guide, are just like blasting issues or comments or whatever, pull requests. You know, those people you can politely but kind of firmly say, hey, please like do this way or whatever. But there are, you run into people, especially like around Hacktoberfest, where there's lots of first time contributors where they are trying and they just are stuck, or they don't know what the best thing to do is, that kind of thing. And making that feel okay for people to like not know how is, I think, really, really valuable in making it a safe space for somebody to learn. And so I think there's ways that you can make your project or your community or anything like that a safe space for people like that as well. And, you know, part of that goes back to having a good README, and instead of being like, to read the docs, you know, like, hey, like, you know, you can answer a question like in a more respectful way and say, you know, okay, well, like, I would try it this way. Here's the README section. You know, this is what I'll try. And let me know if that doesn't work, because it is possible your README is wrong too. Right. I've run into that with Ayu, who we talk about all the time here, and is amazing, but she is on a Windows computer, and I hadn't tried any of our stuff on Windows. And that's not like, Windows computers are fine and valid, you know what I mean? And there's just like this thing that didn't work on Windows. And so it was, you know, the README was incorrect, right, for her. But we took a while, because it was like, she was starting out. This was like years ago, but she was like starting out and we weren't sure, you know, where the problem was, all that stuff. And so it turned out like she learned some stuff. And also I corrected the README, we corrected the README together, you know, but like being willing to to help people a little bit is, yeah, I think goes a long way towards that sort of thing, you know? And it can get hard, and it's hard to do if somebody files a pull request, right? That, you know, they followed all the directions, but you like don't like it, right? That's one. Yeah. That's a situation I've run into a bunch. Have you run into that? Like where they satisfy the requirements of the issue,
yeah,
and you just don't quite like how they did it, right?
Right. Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah.
I mean, because I do a lot of documentation maintenance, for me, that it, I have actually run into that quite a bit. Because there's, it's, we don't have a style guide.
Right.
It's something that can be kind of hard to communicate to other people and to say like, okay, this is how we need to revise it. And to be honest with you, this is maybe not like the best way to approach it, but sometimes I've just gone through and revised it myself and then merged it in. So, I mean, they still get credit for the pull request. And sometimes I'll mention like, hey, you know, I just needed to make some quick updates before this went in. Or, hey, we were under a time crunch, so I went ahead and made these updates. This is why, if you want to meet one-on-one to chat about it, then let me know. But yeah, I've definitely run into that. And that does get really tricky to be able to communicate that, especially in an asynchronous environment, to try and explain like nuances of things and the approach can be a hard conversation to have and communicate.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. You mentioned having a style guide. I think that's it, this goes back to anything that you can get down in writing that you can point to, you know, will help the initial stuff. And it'll also help this sort of situation. It's the same with programming. I mean, like having a style guide for code is or can be really important as well, right? And that doesn't necessarily like always, it's not always like, oh, your indents and your commas and or your semicolons and that kind of thing. Because nowadays that can be handled programmatically, right? Lots of times. But there are like more like high level style things where if you have some opinions, you know, if you can get them down, I think can be really, really valuable. And it's not, there's not, you're never going to cover everything, especially with the writing, you know, but like you said, but trying to, there's like different ways to handle it. I've done the same thing as you, where I've just like made the changes and merged it, you know, and I've also tried to work through like, okay, here's why, you know, and it can be hard. Sometimes it's hard. It's a hard balance. I want people to learn, right? And so it's like, okay, it will take me longer, me personally longer, right, to A, of all write this out and then suggest the changes and then, you know, hope that they're like review it again. You know what I mean? But if I can do it in a way that they'll actually learn and it's not just like change this to this, you know what I mean? Cause I don't think that's valuable. Like if that's all I can come up with personally, then I'll just like kind of do it, you know. But if I can somehow get into words what I mean by this stuff, like why, you know, then I'll either try to make the request and do it, or I will make those changes and write it out as,
yeah,
like this is why I did this, you know, and here's the example of what I mean, you know what I mean? And lots of times to do that, I have to just make the change myself anyway, you know?
Yeah.
Have you ever made a change yourself just to do this sort of thing and then thrown it out and asked them to do it?
I've not gone down that rabbit hole yet.
Yeah, I've done that. Because I needed, like, I basically, for me, I need to see it to like really describe why or whatever, you know? I need to like, and also sometimes to check that I'm right or, you know, that like what I'm thinking of is actually what I'm thinking, you know? But I've gone down that road where it's all done and then I discard the commit and ask for those, you know what I mean? Maybe take a screenshot or something or grab some code, but it's a weird feeling. Yeah. And it's, you know, I don't know. It's all, you know, and I don't think that being a maintainer means you have to like teach people all the time.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't. We have that in Virtual Coffee. We value that. And like, it's one of our goals, right? But I don't think it's every open source maintainer's responsibility to teach people everything, right? But there are ways that you can help people without spending like without doing the kind of stuff I'm talking about, you know, where you're doing that. Cause that's much more of like I feel the responsibility to try to help. But I don't know that. I don't think that's an inherent responsibility for open source maintainers. I do think being a little bit patient and being, you know, kind of respectful. And the more, like I said, the more you can get down in docs or guides or whatever, the easier that will be, both as ways to catch things before they happen and also as ways to point to, you know, you don't have to feel bad. If something's written down and they, and it's like, you know, the, in a pull request is not followed, I don't feel bad. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
About saying, no, you gotta change this. Cause here's why. Right. When I have to come up with the reason why it, and sometimes it's, you know, you get a little bit more internal back and forth anyway.
Yeah. I think that, you know, along the same lines, another good way to build relationships in open source is attending open office hours. And not every project offers these, but like we used to at OpenSauce, like, offer contributors office hours. So if they were working on an issue and they were stuck or they had questions, then they knew like Thursdays at noon or whatever it was, they could come in and they can ask those questions or they can get more context on the project. And I know that there are a lot of places that do that. I think one of the maintainers of Nuxt actually has a Calendly with 10-minute slots that people could book whenever they want. And I thought, well, that's like, that's awesome, right? He does a great job of being a really supportive maintainer. Not everybody has the time to be able to do that. It's not necessary. But I think that, like, look for those opportunities too. You know, often they're in the README or the contributing guide, or if the project has a community page, then it'll share that information there. Or they'll share like, hey, we're doing this event, like show up for the events. And then I know I did Twitter spaces pretty much every week for a year for work. And I noticed who came every time, you know? And I also was more willing to like support that person or help them out. And because I knew like, okay, they're interested in learning and growing. And so we've established this relationship, even though we haven't had like really a conversation face-to-face about that thing. Like there's a lot of asynchronous interactions that went with that. So like also don't underestimate like the value of telling someone thank you or leaving a comment on the blog post that they wrote to say like, hey, I really appreciated that. It helped me to implement this thing in my project. Like those are all ways to kind of like build those relationships with the people and open source and go beyond Hacktoberfest.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. And, you know, I talked about how nice it is as a maintainer to have somebody that, you know, you can trust that comes back over and over again. And I think helping, you know, providing those spots where you can like open up, you know, office hours or anything, anytime where you can provide different ways of help might get you one of those people, right?
Yeah.
Like if somebody's stuck and they just can't get unstuck, they might just, you know, whatever, go to a different project, right? But if you can provide 10 minutes of support and help them through their thing and say, hey, you know, let them know that they're valuable too, you know, they might keep going back and you might end up with a co-maintainer even, right?
Yeah, right.
So I think I loved all this, all of those, like all the things that people do. It's great. I wish I had time to do like all of them. You know what I mean? Both attend everybody else's things and also like provide all this stuff for myself, you know, and also not get fired at my job. So you know, it's tough balance, but you know, I think there's lots of great ways to build those kinds of like relationships in open source.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it comes down to communicating with other people and continuing to build those connections. So enriching those relationships, understanding the other person and their needs. And all of this goes just to the human person. Like we want connections with people. It just happens to be that open source is a pretty good path this month.
Yes. I'd say every month, but especially this month.
Yes. All right, well, we hope that you enjoyed this episode. We will be back again next week, and we'll see you soon.
All right, thanks, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Virtual Coffee Podcast. This episode was produced by Dan Ott and Becca Harald-Weigel. If you have questions or comments, you can hit us up on Twitter at virtualcoffee.io or email us at podcast@virtualcoffee.io. You can find the show notes, sign up for the newsletter, buy some VC merch, and check out all of our other resources on our website, virtualcoffee.io. If you're interested in sponsoring Virtual Coffee, you can find out more information on our website at virtualcoffee.io/sponsorship. Please subscribe to our podcast and be sure to leave us a review. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.